My travels this week have brought me to the eastern side of the county, to a lovely quiet corner of Cumbria that tends to be overlooked sometimes, about Ravenstonedale. Not actually in the village today, but we're up just above the village on the fells, and today I'm in the farmhouse of Raven Franklin. Raven, how long have you lived in this particular house?
I've been here 53 years now, and I was born 4.5 miles away, and my sister lives in the old family home. But I came here rather by chance, just because it happened to be for sale and it was cheap. And then I started farming, having bought it.
I believe your family have been local to this area for generations.
Yes, on my mother's side for very many generations. Certainly well back into the 16th century, but unless people were very important, there aren't many records of them any earlier than that. And that's the case with us. It's legend rather than evidence, which we depend on to go back further than that. But I'm descended from the Fothergill family, which is alleged to have come over with the Conqueror, but there's no proper evidence of that.
It's a very lovely part of the world, but quite remote as well. What kind of farm do you have here?
Well, now we are farming with sheep and beef, rearing calves. But till fairly recently we were selling milk. But it wasn't possible for me to continue milk selling because of a big leisure development next door made it difficult to get the cows to the cow pasture. And so we took them round by the road, and then they got footsore, and then I began to feel that it wasn't worth trying to continue. And then there was a payment for outgoers from the milk selling, so with regret we dropped the milk selling, which was certainly more profitable than the alternatives. And now we're rearing calves and, of course, rearing lambs. And the sheep go out on the fell. Half of them spend a good deal of their time on the open fell.
When I came here up from Kirby Stephen, I came across an open fell road. I'd imagine in winter it can be quite bleak up there.
It can indeed be very, very bleak. In 1947, it was quite impossible to get out of here for a very long time. We didn't get out but on wheels between the 25th of January and the 23rd of March in that year. But, of course, nowadays, with mechanized snow clearance, I'm sure they would get through. But the shovel digging didn't quite reach us on any occasion between those dates. But, of course, we did get out on foot and got out with a horse and sled to bring necessary provisions. It was easier to cope with a snowstorm with horses than it is with tractors, I think.
How far are you from Ravenstone Village itself, then?
Just under 2 miles. But that lane was completely blocked with snow, wall top deep in for hundreds of yards.
It's a lovely old house. I mean, above the door you've got 1717, which I imagine is when it was built. Have you done much to it yourself?
The 1717 relates to an extension of the house. Actually, the part we're in now was built about 1680 by the father of the Robert Hunter, who extended it in 1717. And this is a very typical date for a Ravenstonedale farmhouse, about 1680.
Well, have you done anything with it since you've been here?
My idea has been to alter it as little as possible. I believe in little and often for repair of historic buildings, not total reconditioning and restoration. Restoration generally means sweeping away the historic features. A copy of an historic feature is not as good as the original feature. The way to protect original windows is to keep them painted, and the way to protect original roof timbers is to see that when the odd slate comes off it doesn't rain in for a long time. And that's what I've been aiming to do on all my property. And on one occasion when I was giving a lecture, I think to a women's institute, somebody said, "Well, it looks in very good order, but it looks as though you've never done anything to it." And I said, "Well, that's really how I hope it'll look. In other words, look just as it would have looked 100 or 150 years ago."
When you first came here then, what was the water supply like? And I mean, did it have electricity as well?
No, we had no mains water, a very, very poor private supply. no drainage, no telephone, and no electricity. And it's been quite an achievement to have got all those things here now. And so we're fully up to date with everything now, but they didn't come on their own by any means.
So you actually linked to the national grid now? I don't know if you're on generator.
No, we're linked to the national grid. Yeah. For 10 years I was a part-time member of Norweb, of the board of Norweb, and during that period I pushed rural electrification for all I was worth, but we had got it here just before I was appointed to the board. So that's something I've always been very much interested in, and I used to be very upset when I heard people saying that rural electrification was more advanced in Syria than it was in England, that this was in about the late 50s and early 60s. But however, Norweb did a splendid job on rural electrification and put it in at a very, very reasonable price. And there's only really a handful of farms between Buxton and the Scottish border which weren't offered a supply on very, very reasonable terms.
You mentioned conservation and keeping the buildings the way they should be. You've actually won an award, haven't you, for your barns here?
Well, it was partly for the barns. Mm-hmm. It was really for farming and conservation was the title of it. That included not using artificial nitrogen on the meadows, which has resulted in them retaining their herbs, all their wildflowers and orchids and the like. And also for the walls, I've done a lot of dry stone walling. This is really one of my favourite occupations, and I've built over 1,900 yards of new wall on this farm since I came here, over, of course, many years. And as you say, for maintaining the traditional barns and farming generally in the traditional way. And you can get a very good crop without artificial nitrogen if you never use it. We do use a lot of what's locally called rough muck, which consists of lying young cattle loose on bought straw, and they tread it up, and if you give the meadows a good coat of that pretty frequently, you get a very good crop. But you also don't destroy the herbs. And a map has in fact said that our meadows are the best herb-rich meadows in East Cumbria, a title we're very proud of.
As regards to dry stone walling, there's quite an art to that. Are you self-taught?
Self-taught up to a point. I think one learns these things by practice. But my father was knowledgeable on that subject, and there was a very, very good builder in Ravenstonedale of the name of Mark Handley, who during my school days and for quite a bit afterwards taught me an immense amount about building. I learnt a great deal about slating and indeed all the aspects of estate management from him. He was a very, very excellent craftsman, but unlike many excellent craftsmen, he was willing to share his secrets with, at any rate, with me, and I believe with anybody else who had the sense to take an interest in what he was doing.
Are there plenty of raw materials on the land here then for building the walls?
Yes, it's not very difficult to quarry. In fact, it's very easy now with the JCB. You can root out big pieces of limestone or small pieces very easily indeed. But I get most of the extra stone I need, I get out of the local streams, just get it out of the beck, which is less effort than quarrying. And of course, the floods keep on bringing down a bit more. I get cobbles for paving out of the stream in particular. One couldn't quarry those because they have to be waterborne.
You're a member of Cumbria County Council as well. When did you get involved in local politics?
Well, I became involved in local politics when I was nominated to the Yorkshire Dales National Park Planning Committee in 1963. I don't know who suggested my going on, but I soon found that national park politics, perhaps as opposed to national politics, were very interesting. And the efforts to conserve historic buildings and try to help local farmers from being pushed out by excessive amalgamations, and looking after woodlands, etc., were all the subjects I was very much interested in, and I did enjoy my time on the Yorkshire Dales very much, and nominated members normally do 10 years. When my 10 years was up, I was reluctant to feel that was the end of my time on the Yorkshire Dales, so I thought I would stand for Cumbria County Council in the hope that they might appoint me as their representative on the Yorkshire Dales. Well, they were kind enough to do so, and they've been kind enough to continue to do so ever since 1974, been appointed by various types of council, Conservative, Labour, no overall control, etc., but they've all been very kind in appointing me to that position, which I find very interesting, and only wish there was a larger area of Cumbria in the National Park, because there's no doubt National Park can do a lot for local farmers as well as for the amenities.
The National Park obviously tries to keep the area as beautiful as it is. Do you find there's a bit of a dichotomy between the two, that they find the place must progress, but at the same time you don't want it to change too much?
Well, of course, there is a potential controversy here, but on the other hand, tourism, which is an important revenue earner for quite a number of people, does depend on keeping the area nice, and most people want to see the area kept nice, except for the odd thing they might want to do themselves. And I think the best way of deciding whether the National Park is doing a good job or not is to see all the plans which have come forward, and to see how some of them, which would have been horrendous, have been turned down, and others have been much improved. Unless you've seen all that, I don't think you really know what a lot of good a national park's done. And of course, not everything a national park does is good, and sometimes they are too restrictive. But it's really up to the members of the park planning committees to try and interpret the rules properly. You can have quite a lot of sensible development without doing any damage. You can keep houses in good livable condition without spoiling them. And in fact, I'm afraid that some of the historic buildings have been damaged by too much money being spent on them, not too little.
Well, of course, if you bring in tourists into the area, that brings more cars, more transport, and people start shouting for more roads. How do you deal with that aspect?
Well, of course, I'm very sad that the rail network's been thrown away. I can't help feeling that in the 21st century we'll go back to much more public transport, and that the rail will be the feature, electrified railways. The M25, I think, is a lesson that if you produce more roads, you simply produce more traffic. So I'm not in favour of unlimited road building. I think villages and small towns will have to be bypassed, because we'll never get it all back onto rail. But I feel that in future, planning permission should be directed to those areas which have good rail access, and especially any industrial development should be required to use rail. Of course, around here, our big problem is that the West Coast main line is being run down. It's not getting the same treatment as the East Coast main line. In fact, I even heard that some of the most modern electric locomotives of the West Coast main line had been borrowed by the East Coast main line, and we had some of their old diesels back here, which unfortunately break down from time to time, giving the rail line from Carlisle, Penrith and Oxenholme to Euston a bad name. Because it is terribly important for the whole area to have that line really working properly. And the trains now, if they keep to the timetable, which they very frequently do, but by no means always, the timing is all right, but they're often very overcrowded, and you can't really count on them running on time. And there aren't enough of them. Well, I hope that by now we would be seeing at Oxenholme station trains with Milan and the like on it, not having to wait ages for